And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitt. Today, we are not actually recapping the game against West Virginia. We will wait until Fetch is back to do that after the quick turnaround that we have for the game tonight against the Iowa State Cyclones. Instead, we are previewing that game. And to help me do that, I have coming back to the show, Levi Stevenson of Wide Right Natty Light. Levi, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's always great to have you on the podcast. Usually, we're talking football and you're trying to keep me from jumping off the ledge. This year, basketball, unfortunately, has not been going so great for Iowa State. While they had a phenomenal win against Texas just the other day here, I think it's fair to say that this season has not gone to expectation for you guys so far.
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I think most of us expected us to take a step back this year. You can't turn over half your roster every single season and expect to maintain high level success. That's what they did. I mean, they graduated like five or six people. Well, I mean, if you're Duke or Kentucky or Kansas, then sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're a blue blood, then sure. But, Iowa State is, if you broke basketball down into tiers, there's blue bloods. And then there's like the almost blue bloods, like the Louisvilles and the, I don't know. Yeah, Gonzaga, maybe Virginia, stuff like that. There's the next tier, and Iowa State's kind of in that next tier, but it's not. That tier doesn't get five star recruits all the time and stuff like that. I mean, you might get one, maybe one or two a decade, and the rest of it's going to be built on maybe some high end four stars and a lot of three stars. You just can't. A school like Iowa State just can't overhaul half of its roster every single season and hope to keep up with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely kind of interesting to kind of see how some of the other schools have to deal with that roster turnover. Kansas has been very fortunate to have quite a bit of turnover, but still be able to get guys that have either been in the system long enough, to be able to go ahead and kind of keep things flat at least, or just get really good recruiting classes, which will happen from time to time when we're talking about those higher level schools. Texas Tech is kind of dealing with a similar sort of thing where they got lucky last year in that they, replaced most of the production that they had and had a really good year, which helped them in recruiting this year while they have still taken a step back, it's not nearly as far back as you would have thought when they're replacing most of their production 2 years in a row.
Right. And that's why like a school like Texas Tech maintaining that level of success more than through a recruiting cycle, two to four years, maintaining that level of success beyond that for a school like Texas Tech is super, super difficult just because they're not going to reel in top 10, top 15 classes all the time. Now, granted, fortunately they have a coach that can allow their team to play significantly above their talent level.
Well, not only that, but I would argue that Chris Beard is new enough at Texas Tech that people are still excited about what he brings and kind of that vision. And of course, it doesn't hurt, coming off of a national championship game appearance, all those things really, really helped out. But just the fact that he is a new enough coach that it's fairly straightforward, I think, to kind of get people to buy in. Whereas a team like Iowa State, Frum's been there for 5 years, this is his fifth year now. So he's a little bit further along. Some of the shine of the new hire is potentially not quite there anymore.
The difference between Iowa State and Texas Tech, though, is that Texas Tech, they got a new coach because they needed a new coach. Because they fired the previous guy or whatever. He didn't move on to greener pastures, whereas Iowa State had to take a highly successful coach and era and replace that. So it's a little bit different scenario where Chris Beard was a breath of fresh air from a program that had been stagnant for decades, outside of a couple years here and there with Bobby Knight. But for the most part, Iowa State was already coming off a really good year. There was a little bit of room to go up, but not a lot. But there was a lot of room to go down. And unfortunately, there's a thousand different talking points to the Steve Prohm discussion because what we've been having is, he came in, obviously had really good players, had success. Is it because the players are really good? Is it because he's a good coach? Is it then you come into the argument of, you know, Fred left really horribly unbalanced classes, and you know, and the last, his last recruiting class was nothing. So he didn't, you know, he left the talent that was there and ready to play was good, but you know, it was, the program was not set up for success beyond the following 2 years. And Prohm's had to deal with that. Then you can say, well, but he hasn't done that well because some of the guys that, you know, came in, you know, thought we were going to be, you know, really good, didn't pan out. So, well, then you can counter that with, well, he had to bring in, he had to take some risk on some certain guys like Lindell and Kamlar and stuff like that, that didn't really, you know, they played well when they're really good, but had some off the field, you know, had some off the court stuff that prevented them from hitting their ceiling. And then obviously now you've got Tyrese, who, you know, a three-star guy that flew under the radar that you're expecting, you know, he's gonna be a guy that you can build your program around for three or four years, and all of a sudden now in 2 years he's a top five pick. So it's like, you know, I how do you plan for that? And then you'll have someone come say, well, good coaches get their players to stay, and then someone says, well, it's not how it works. And
right,
I don't know. There's a thousand, like I said, there's a thousand different talking points to the Steve Prohm argument that you can use to convince either way of whether he's been doing a good job or not.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I mean, kind of to bring it back to this particular year's team, though, you know, I think there was a lot of discussion preseason, at least from around the conference, that it seemed like it was going to be the Tyrese Haliburton show. That there wasn't necessarily a whole lot of established talent around him, and that the team was going to go the way that he went. I don't know that that's necessarily borne out. Obviously, you know, he had the injury earlier in the year, and then this most recent injury where he is now out for the rest of the season. But it just seems like this team has struggled quite a bit. And it hasn't necessarily coincided, I think, with his good games or bad games. But
Tyrese has been every bit as good as advertised this season. I mean, he's still, you know, he at a significantly higher volume. He's still shooting 42% from three. He was, you know, he's still playing at a really high level as far as his passing. His defense was really good. I mean, Tyrese was, if he was on a team that was like in the top 25, we'd be talking about him as a wooden candidate.
I definitely agree. Like, before the injury, I honestly was of the impression that he deserved to be in discussion for Big 12 Player of the Year, even.
Sure. Like, but before the injury, he was named a Cousy Award finalist too. So it's like, you know, he was having an incredible season. But the deal with Tyrese is he's very different from a lot of the kind of the superstar college players that you see, because most of the superstar college players you see are like the alpha scorers, that their job is when they're really good, they're scoring 30 points a game, stuff like that. When Tyrese is really good, he's getting like maybe 12 to 15 and he's throwing in like 10 assists and 7 or 8 rebounds. You know, Tyrese is a different player because his greatest asset is his playmaking, not his scoring. And it's different. So, you know, Tyrese can do everything in the world, and he was for months. He was doing everything you could possibly ask for out of Tyrese Haliburton. But the problem, and the offense was generating a lot of open three-pointers. I think they led the conference, you know, up until like a little bit ago, they led the conference in three-point attempts, you know, through non-conference and in the end of the conference season. But Iowa State was just not knocking them down. The team is full of good athletes, some raw players, but really no sharpshooters to speak of, which is obviously a stark contrast from what we've seen from Iowa State for the last basically decade, you know, where you had Tyrus McGee and Scott Christopherson and Matt Thomas and Naz Long, and then, you know, then even George Niang became a really good three-point shooter. You know, there was like Iowa State, and then, you know, then last year you had Mariel Shayok. And then Donovan Jackson and stuff like that. You know, they've had a sharpshooter, a guy that really is a true knockdown shooter, for the last decade. And now your knockdown shooter, and he is statistically a knockdown shooter, is Tyrese Haliburton. But the problem is that he's your guy that sets up your offense, not the guy that puts, you know, he's not supposed to be the guy that puts the ball in the bucket. He literally
can't do everything.
Right. And This team needs him to do everything, which is the problem. Part of the reason that Tyrese is getting such hype from the NBA is like kind of like I mentioned, where the NBA is saturated with these alpha dog scorer types that, you know, their whole game is being able to create a shot or knock in, you know, whatever, some play defense, whatever, but most of it is shot creating and shooting. But Tyrese is different in that he's 6'5" point guard, really long, plays hard, is well known to be a really, he has a great on and off the court leader. Teammates love him, and he's skilled. He's a good catch and shoot guy, but he is like a god tier role player in an offense because he is best, and he is so good at making his other teammates look better than they are, and elevating the play of the entire team around him. The problem is that, he would fit wonderfully in most modern NBA offenses because they have tons of shooters. And if you can space the floor well and find some guy that knows how to work in space, then you're going to be in good shape. And that's what Tyrese will fit in. The problem is that Iowa State's roster is not built like that. It's got, Rashear Bolton, who's a really good slasher. His 3-point shooting has gotten better, but he's a good slasher. Prentice Nixon is not a good shooter. Michael Jacobson's been super streaky and basically not a good shooter. Zion Griffin's been okay, but he's not like a sharpshooter or anything like that. And then, Caleb Grill has struggled. Trey Jackson's probably the closest thing they've got to a quote-unquote sharpshooter, but even he's struggled. He struggled quite a bit during the non-conference play. He's picked it up recently, and he's got the game. His release looks really good. I think it's just a matter of confidence and getting in rhythm and stuff like that. So he'll get there, but the team has no sharpshooters to speak of. Despite all of the open looks that Tyrese is generating, they just are not knocking them down. And when you have a team that's built around being able to knock down threes, not having shooters is a huge, huge problem.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Kansas, to a degree, has kind of seen that this year, where they have it set up quite often for 3-point shooters to be taking shots, and they're either just not taking them, or when they are taking them, they're not hitting them very often. And so,
right.
So kind of talking about the rest of this team, now that Tyrese Haliburton is out for the season, where does this team turn to? I mean, I think we might have seen a little bit about what they can do against Texas, but I don't know how much of that was actually Iowa State figuring things out or how much of that was Texas not having players and having a coach who, honestly, I'm shocked that he's still in the Big 12 because he doesn't really seem to know what he's doing.
So the interesting development that's kind of happened over the last couple of weeks is that Solomon Young has reappeared as kind of a nicely talented offensive player. He's been playing hard, and they've been running the offense through him the last couple of games. He's been playing really well. He got a lot of flack earlier in the season because, for his being as a, he's a pretty skilled guy. If you look at his physical body, I mean, he's a really strong guy. He's athletic, but never felt like he was playing at the same level of intensity as that people were expecting out of him. You are hoping that he can figure it out. And then all of a sudden the last couple of weeks, he's been playing well. He's been knocking down mid range. He's showing good touch around the post. And he's been a place that I would say can go to for a little bit of offense. Rashear Bolton, I think, has enjoyed being able to take some more shots, being able to run the offense a little bit more. I don't know. I don't trust it, but Prentice Nixon seems to be playing a little bit better. He's played a little bit better the last couple games, knocked down more shots. I don't trust that long term. But it kind of is what it is, I suppose. Michael Jacobson had a good game on Saturday, finally rebounding and scoring the way he should be the whole season. I don't know. And maybe Saturday was this is the team that we should have been seeing the whole year, and this is what they're going to play like the rest of the year. Texas is a pretty good defensive team. Now they lost Jericho Sims for the year, and he was a big anchor in the middle of that defense. But yeah, they were knocking down shots. At one point, they were like 10 of 14 from the floor or something like that. Like they were playing really well and knocking down shots that they should have been knocking down all season. And when Iowa State is knocking down shots, that offense is really good at generating open shots. When they're knocking them down, they're a pretty good team, actually, but they just have not done that at all with any remote consistency through most of this season.
I think what we've seen across all of college basketball is that the crop of shooters in college basketball this year are nowhere near where they're usually at. A lot of teams are struggling to knock down shots, at least do it consistently.
Right.
This isn't really necessarily that much of a surprise. If your team is built on offense and offense is down as a whole across the board, you're probably going to struggle.
Right.
You know, what Now, of course, part of the problem, normally I would turn to KenPom to get a good idea of, you know, like what the numbers are, what to kind of expect, and I could do a fairly good job trying to preview a team like Iowa State for this game coming up. But losing such a big piece in Halliburton and then seeing those, you know, flashes of what these guys could potentially do without him, even if it is against a team like Texas that I don't necessarily have a lot of trust in, I kind of don't know what to believe. So, you know, that's part of the reason for having you on today rather than trying to do this with my normal co-host. But so, like, looking ahead specifically to this game, we'll dig in real quick after the break, but I did want to kind of ask you before we go to a break, you know, like, looking at this team on KenPom, they seem to have some fairly glaring weaknesses, but how much of that has actually changed? I mean, are they still, you know, are you still expecting them to be turning the ball over a bunch like they seem to have been doing in conference play? I guess the better way to ask this question is, what's the biggest thing that you think changes for Iowa State now that Halliburton is not going to be there the rest of the year?
I think the biggest change you're going to see is that they're going to be using a lot more of the shot clock. I don't think they'll try to run as much. And because he's really good in the pick and roll, he's really good in transition, especially. And right now they don't really have a guy that's really great at pushing the ball up the floor like Tyrese was. So I think they'll probably try to slow it down, try to limit possessions as much as they can. I would guess. But it's tough to say.
All right. So let's go ahead. We will take a quick break. When we come back, I do want to talk, kind of break down the game a little bit more, talk specifically about this game, and then we'll kind of look at Iowa State, maybe the rest of the year, and maybe a little bit of the Big 12 in general. But we will be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. And we're back. Okay. So getting into this actual particular game, like I said, I usually try to go to the game prep that KenPom has, whereas my co-host likes the Torvik site as well. So we tend to look at both of those, but you know, I'm not really sure what on here to actually trust from an Iowa State perspective. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on this particular team. Like, what are the main strengths for this team now offensively? You've talked about how there are guys that, you know, like they're getting shots set up, and the guys are going to be able to go, or they need to be able to hit them for the offense to be clicking. Who is the main three-point threat on this team now? You know, is there a guy that's a good candidate for just the random out of nowhere, you know, bombing from three that always seems to get Kansas fans nervous?
If there's anybody, I would say it's, I don't even know. I guess in theory, I suppose Trey Jackson probably could, but otherwise you're looking at maybe Rashear Bolden in theory probably could. He's had a couple games where he's gone like 100% from the floor, but it's tough to say. There's not really a guy that I'm super counting on would be like, oh, he could go 5 for 7 or something. I don't think there's anybody on that team right now.
Okay. So then instead I'll go ahead and kind of approach this from what Kansas does and then how you think Iowa State might be able to attack that. So offensively, actually both sides of the ball, how does Iowa State handle a player like Udoka Azubuike? I mean, I'm guessing your answer is probably going to be not well, but I figured that you might have something else to add.
I don't know, because even in the Fred Hoiberg era, Iowa State has always been really bad at dealing with really, really good bigs. In theory, Solomon Young is strong enough to do it. Like, if he plays hard and plays smart, he can handle it. But, I mean, I don't really have anything for it. I'd rather them not double team down on the block. Because then he can, you know, Udoka is good enough of a passer where if you double him on the block, he can find shooters or something.
He doesn't try to dribble through the double. So.
Well, yeah, fair.
He's been having a problem with that recently, at least, where he will have someone come over and double or even triple team him sometimes. And instead of kicking it back out to an open shooter, he'll try to dribble right through it and usually ends up losing the ball. So games where he's had a lot of turnovers, he's trying to do too much on his own, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I would say it's not very good at generating turnovers. It's just really difficult to say. I honestly don't know what the game plan is to deal with Udoka Azubuike is. I don't have a suggestion even, because they just Solomon Young could do it if he plays hard, but he hasn't done that consistently enough through this season or even through his career for me to say, oh, that's how you do it. I don't have an answer for that question, unfortunately, for you.
So now that we've destroyed all hope on the inside, what about outside, where Devon Dotson and Marcus Garrett are probably the best tandem in terms of defensively, at least, for the backcourts there? Does Iowa State really have a guy with Halliburton out that can handle that? That can handle that kind of defensive pressure? We've seen Marcus Garrett in the last 3-4 games really turn it on, where he just straight up takes the ball from players time after time. Do they have someone who can handle the ball well enough, or who is?
Rashir Bolton can handle the ball well enough. I have concerns about off ball movement. It has not been good this year. It's been okay. But against a team like Kansas, whatever, you're going to want to be able to try to knock them down from deep. It's been super inconsistent. They did it okay against Texas. They've done it okay against a few other teams, but not good enough.
I was going to ask you about that, because I didn't get to watch much of the Iowa State-Texas game. I unfortunately was coaching my own kids in a playoff basketball game for their rec league. And so I was curious, like, how much of that was Iowa State getting a bunch of wide open three pointers, or was Texas defending them well and they were just knocking them down?
A little bit of both. They were, like I said before, even against good teams this year, Iowa State has been able to generate open threes. They're just not knocking them down. They knocked them down a little bit against Texas. They knocked down some contested stuff, but the offense is good at getting open threes. They just had done a really poor job of knocking them down up to this point. And they just did on Saturday what they should have been doing all season. That's really all there is to it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the game score now and all of those. It seems like I'm a little surprised, because I was under the impression that Iowa State shot more than 15 threes. They made 6 of them. So it was not like they were just raining threes all over the place and got hot. So, it makes me wonder kind of more what was going on there. They got to the free throw line a whole lot, which will be fairly helpful. So kind of talking about then, I don't want to sit here and go through every position and have you cry to come up with an answer how they attack it. So let's shift gears a little bit here. If Iowa State were to be able to stay in this game and either make it close or somehow get an upset, what is that game going to have to look like? What is Iowa State able to do that could potentially cause problems for the Jayhawks that would allow them to stay close?
Of anything that's shown up regularly throughout the season, virtually nothing. If they randomly have a good shooting game, like I said, against every team, they've gotten open shots. They just haven't knocked them down. So if for whatever reason Iowa State's shooting 60% from three, then they've got a chance. But I don't know. It's part of it too is depending on if Udoka has a game like he did last game, 15 points, 17 rebounds, and 4 blocks, that does not bode well at all for Iowa State. This game is if they want to have a chance, they've got to out hustle Kansas. They've got to play more physical. They've got to out hustle them, and you got to hope he can get some of those outside shots to go in, and you see what happens. Basically, they have to approach this game like a mid-major would approach playing a high seed in the NCAA tournament. You out-hustle them, and you hit shots. And that's how they're going to have to win. That's the only way they can win this.
Yeah, that sounds like a fair statement. Some of these, though, are the worst ones for me, because I always hate the feeling of not having something specific that the other team does really well that they can try to shut down. If the only way that Iowa State could potentially win this one is that someone just goes ballistic from three or something like that. Like, there's really no way to tell where that's going to come from and have a super solid game plan. It's almost like you just got to do what you do and hope that nothing weird happens. Those are a lot of comforting to fans.
I would say the most
that you can attack.
The most likely person is probably Rashir Bolton, but he's been shooting better in conference play. He's a really good slasher. He's very difficult to guard on the dribble drive. It's tough. Some days he can shoot, some days he can't. And you just kind of got to hope you get the right one. If Rashir Bolden decides he can shoot at Allen Fieldhouse, then, they have a chance, but If Prentice Nixon gets a wild hair to take 10 threes, I don't love that. He's a player that every time he makes a difficult shot, which is not that often, but when he does, I kind of cringe a little bit because I have fear that he's going to continue to shoot, which has generally been bad. So that's honestly, that's just kind of where I'm at with this team right now is someone there's people that can do it, but they just haven't. Hopefully Saturday is an indication because they played well. Everybody knocked down shots. Michael Jacobson especially played hard. If you get Michael Jacobson and Solomon Young playing hard and doing damage down low, we'll see what happens. And both of those guys are capable of stretching the floor. But who knows?
Yeah, I was to say, those are kind of the things that might potentially bother me kind of looking from the outside is that, you know, Kansas – does not handle it well if David McCormick and Yudo Katsubuki, I was just looking at Silvio's name on the page here. Yeah. But if both of their big men in Doak and then McCormick get into foul trouble early, Kansas doesn't necessarily handle that the best. Doak has shown a better ability, I think, to kind of play out on the perimeter a little bit. But when he does that, he's kind of open to the dribble drive and a guy to get past him or he'll pick up a cheap foul to really stop it. So a few of those things potentially have me worried. But as has been the case in the last few games, unless Kansas gets two quick fouls on both those guys early in the first half and then gets down in a big hole, or even in that case, like there's still a thought that this defense can clamp down well enough that they can make a big run in the second half to kind of overcome that. But it almost seems like that's kind of the way you have to do it. And you kind of have to make that happen late in the second half, where you can build up a lead with not enough time for the defense to really, have that effect. But similar to what you were talking about with Prentice Nixon, if you had told me before this last game against Oklahoma that Marcus Garrett was going to have to, put the team on his back offensively for them to go ahead and win a big game like that, I would not have felt very, confident in that. Garrett has shown the ability to kind of drive, but, he went 5-7 in their last game from three. That was 5-7 at one point. I'm trying to remember what it actually was. It was better than that. I was absolutely shocked that he had a game that was that good from three, because that's been the biggest criticism of him is that he does not take open shots. So yeah, he ended up 6-9, which is absolutely ridiculous. No one thought he had it in him before it actually happened. I can definitely kind of see an instance where someone might randomly go off against this team. But the defense, I think, is good enough that they can kind of handle some of that. So, all right. So let's go ahead and wrap up the actual discussion of the game with your prediction of what's going to happen in this game.
It's not going to be a lot of fun for Iowa State fans, I don't think. I think Udoka Azubuike is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of like 25-12-ish. I think he's going to have a huge game. I could see Rashear Bolton going off for maybe 25 points. But in the end, I would say just does not have the firepower to hang with the Kansas squad. I'm guessing it's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 90-70, 90-68, something like that.
Oh, wow. You're expecting a really high scoring game. See, I agree.
Yeah, Iowa State doesn't play defense.
Well, yeah, but Kansas plays phenomenal defense. So if it's going to be like a 20-point margin, I'm guessing it's probably going to be more like a 55-75 or something like that.
Well, I think it's only because Iowa State will probably give up some transition stuff, and it'll just be just due to sheer volume of possessions, I think, is where the scoring comes from.
Oh, that's true. If Kansas does score 90, I don't think the defense clamps down often enough or well enough to keep. Because we saw that with against Oklahoma. Kansas scored 87. They gave up 70 to Oklahoma, which is completely uncharacteristic. But if you look at the, points per possession, it was only 0.96. So, which is well right. Under what they, what Oklahoma usually gets on a per possession basis.
Right.
So yeah, I could definitely see it something like that. I do also think that Kansas is going to get helped by, not that the crowd isn't always juiced, but it's going to be extra juiced because Marcus Morris is getting his jersey retired at halftime of the game. Oh. So there's going to be a lot of people, right. I mean, this is one of those games that there's going to be a crazy atmosphere anyway, but it's going to just take it up another notch because of that, happening at halftime. So
that and Kansas Iowa State is a pretty good basketball rivalry too. Now, obviously, even last year they beat them. Iowa State won two out of three games. So you know, even in down years, it's usually pretty competitive.
Definitely. I mean, I don't know that I'm expecting it to be competitive this year just because of all of the stuff happening around Iowa State. But, you know, if you're going to tell me that there was going to be a game where Kansas was just not going to play well against a random team that's probably going to finish towards the bottom of the conference, like Iowa State and Kansas State are probably the two best bets for that. We've already seen, you know, kind of one thing happen. Kansas State already got under Kansas' skin once. Hopefully they'll keep it under control and not let Iowa State do a similar sort of thing. But I could definitely see it. So, all right. Any other final thoughts about the game before we start looking at the conference as a whole?
I'm looking for football season.
Oh, I don't blame you at all. Unfortunately, I'm not looking forward to football season. I'm sure it'll be better than it was last year for the Jayhawks, but they still have a long way to go to kind of dig out of those holes, and the loss of some assistants and some players and stuff is not making me super, super optimistic for the year coming up. But
are probably going to reel it back just a little bit, because last year we saw that when they had all those expectations the roster now is better than last year for sure. And the big problem was the offensive line last year, and the offensive line loses experience but gains talent. The ceiling is lot higher for this team.
Definitely. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that should feel excited about it. Unfortunately, it's Kansas fan. It's just hard. It's hard to get excited about football until they actually do
something. That's fair, man. That's fair.
Talking about the rest of this basketball season, though, I want to get your thoughts. You know, it seems fairly clear that the Big 12 conference is now a Kansas-Baylor race. You know, if you look on a lot of sites that are projecting it out, it seems like it's kind of a dead heat here still. A lot of the advanced metric sites like Kansas better than Baylor and are thinking that potentially Kansas will get a win against Baylor in Waco. There's a very realistic shot, though, that if Kansas can pull that off, that both of these teams end at 17-1. But I want to get your thoughts first on, do you see anyone else beating either Baylor or Kansas the rest of the year?
I would doubt it. I think those are clearly the two better teams, the two best teams. West Virginia is a good defensive team, but they've got some serious problems on offense. Same with Texas Tech. I don't see anybody else in the conference with the horses to keep up. Big 12 conference is kind of bad this year.
Yeah, I don't even know that it's necessarily bad. I mean, it's definitely not as deep as it was.
Teams that you would consider bad, I would say Iowa State, Texas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, for sure. At least
Know that I would even consider them to be bad. I think that they're nowhere near as good as they were before. But, like, you know, we're comparing the conference to prior years where everybody was in, like, the top 60 in KenPom, whereas now – like, everyone's in the top 100. You don't have any of those really horrible teams that you usually have in a lot of these power conferences. So they're definitely not where they were before. But I still think that at least most of these teams are mediocre. Like, you know, I wouldn't be expecting so I guess it really just depends on what your definition of bad is. Like, I can agree a team like TCU is bad.
I'm thinking TCU, Kansas State, Iowa State, now Texas. And Oklahoma State. I would say I would call those five teams bad.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely understand the argument. I don't know that I would go that far with all of those teams, but I can definitely understand at least someone from outside looking in, or if you're, you know, comparing to prior iterations of these teams, they definitely look bad in comparison.
I think on their best day, Iowa State has the highest ceiling of those five. But I mean, Iowa State rarely has hit their ceiling this season.
I would actually argue that it's a team like Oklahoma State with Halliburton no longer in the picture. But
that's fair.
Then, like, Oklahoma State's had all kinds of problems getting to that ceiling, just like Iowa State has this year.
Sure. I can get on board with that.
Yeah. So, all right. So I guess my last question, kind of looking at the Big 12 in general, is, you know, it looks like the Big 12 is probably only going to get four teams in the tournament this year. Maybe Oklahoma can sneak in, but they seem to be having some issues. You know, like, are you thinking that it's only going to be the top four? Do you think Oklahoma gets in? And if they do get in, which big wins do they have to have the rest of the way?
I would guess Oklahoma gets in. I'd be honest, I don't even know the rest of their schedule. If I'm going to be totally honest with you, just because of the way Ohio State's been, I've kind of checked out of the rest of the conference. So it's interesting with Iowa State is because we were really into it, then we were really frustrated, and then we were pretty apathetic. It seemed like this past Saturday, Hilton was pretty good this past Saturday. They played well, and it seems like a lot of people have started to let the animosity go and just say, okay, we're just going to cheer these guys on, see what happens. Just ride it out, because, you know, otherwise we're just sitting here wasting our time complaining about something.
So let me shift then instead and ask you this instead. Iowa State would need, let's see, they would need three. Oh gosh, I'm trying to look at it right now. They theoretically could qualify for the NIT if they win four of their last games and then get a win in the Big 12 tournament.
Nope.
I think I have the numbers right.
The only preseason, the only postseason chance comes if they win the tournament.
I was going to say, do you think that there is a better than like 1% possibility that happens?
Yeah, 1%, sure. I mean, problem is they got to play West Virginia again. They've got to play, you know, they get Oklahoma State. Well, I guess they're at Oklahoma State, though. So they're at Oklahoma State. They got West Virginia again. They've got to play Kansas State again at Kansas State. They've got
Yeah, but as we talked about, Kansas State's a bad team.
It's on the road.
They're honestly are the worst team rated wise in the Big 12, and it's not even close. Like it's Iowa on, State it, right I now, know.
It's on the road. Rated man. 71. I would say it's bad on the road.
No, and I, really I, bad on the road. I can definitely agree with that. Actually, we've seen quite a few teams that are bad on the road this year, so that wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But you know, I mean, I at least see, you know, if you're just looking at comparative team strength, like Iowa State should beat TCU. Because that was, you know, that was going to be at home. They probably should beat Oklahoma State with all the problems Oklahoma State's had. And yeah, that's going to be on the road as well. So you kind of have to wonder. But if you're just looking then at comparative strength, they should beat Kansas State as well, even though that one's on the road. So that means, you know, if they win that one and then, or if they win all three of those games and then steal one against Kansas, well, it's obviously, I think we both think there's absolutely no way that happens. At home against Texas Tech, who had some up and down issues of their own this year, or at home against West Virginia, who just had a absolutely inexplicable loss to Oklahoma State. Like, I think there's at least a possibility they get one of those, in which case they have to win in order to get back to 500. They have to win one game in the Big 12 tournament, it would actually have to be two, because then they would have to get a loss after that point to then be 500. So it's at least theoretically possible, but I mean, I agree. It's not very likely, because they're probably going to run into Kansas or Baylor before they would get to the semifinals. It's not very likely. But if they can steal a couple of them, include, you know, if they could somehow win every game after this Kansas game, and I wouldn't give it a non-zero chance. Like you said, they've definitely played a whole lot better against Texas than I expected them to, and I could see them kind of carrying some of that over, even just a little bit, with some of these other teams that are starting to struggle down the stretch. So. I mean, would it take something like that for this team, for the fan base, though, to really get back behind this team and kind of really pay attention to what else
this
is
team,
going on?
Or
is that
the fan base? What they want to see is they want to see a team that's playing hard and that's playing smart basketball. If, you know, if they're getting open shots and they just can't quite knock them down, they can move on, I guess. But that what we saw was not only a team that wasn't knocking down shots, but they weren't playing hard. They weren't rebounding. They weren't playing defense. They're turning the ball over a lot. A team that was impossible to enjoy watching. Even if
so
they
what
get
you're
beat
saying
by a team
is that they are
just,
reasonable fans.
Better. They want to see, because we've all ruled out the possibility of postseason play. We've all moved on from that and said that's not going to happen. And now that Tyrese is gone, we don't even have any sort of sense of false hope or whatever that Tyrese would have provided us. Now it's just, I want to see this team play hard and play like they haven't given up. That's what I want. That's what I want to see. That's what everybody else wants to see. If they don't win again, or if they only win one or two games, if they still play hard, and they look like they're giving, they're trying, and they're giving it their best, even against teams that are vastly superior talent wise, then, you know, we'll be okay. Well, as a fan base, we will be fine.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. It sounds like you guys have your head in the right place. Unfortunately, it just hasn't gone your way so far this year. So, all right, well, we will go ahead and leave it there. I appreciate you coming on, Levi.
Yeah, no problem.
It's not the easiest season to kind of deal with. You know, you've had these kind of seasons in football as well, and so you know we both know how these kind of things work, and kind of just brace to try to get through it. So, let the people know where they can find you online.
So most of my Iowa State stuff, obviously my articles and whatever, also are at wideridenattylight.com. The Twitter account is at wideRTNattyLT. I have a personal account. It's at Levi R. Stev, S-T-E-V. I tweet about lots of not Iowa State stuff. That's about it. If you're really just interested in my Iowa State opinions, the main wide right account is where you want to be.
Yeah, I know. I've caught some of your non-Iowa State opinions before, and I know that I like to talk about non-KU stuff occasionally on my own personal one. So I highly recommend, if you're looking for just something entertaining. You know, we've got a lot of diverse interests from all of the people that cover all the Big 12 teams. But yeah, Levi, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million of apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can give us a rating and a review as well. 5 stars, nice comments if you could. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to get you all the information that you need. If you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me via email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. But Levi, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.